to us to compare BT versus conventional cotton.
Appreciate it, Hank. Bob, you're a hard act to follow. So when I was asked to speak here this year, they asked me, we had at least through most of the Mid-South. I'm not so much familiar with Texas, but the Mid-South region and even the Southeast to some degree had some pretty heavy bollworm pressure in the last couple of years. And the way we're set, the way it's looking right now, we're going to probably see a pretty substantial increase in cotton going into this next year. Well, one of the questions that's coming up more and more is about non-BT cotton, conventional cotton. Can we grow it in the Mississippi Delta, anywhere in Mississippi and other areas? It's coming up more and more. There's a couple varieties out there that's getting a lot of attention that are actually good varieties. So that's coming up. We have a couple big growers that's been dabbling with it a little bit and have had some success. And as they talk to other growers, the word kind of spreads. So how much of this we'll see, I don't know. I don't think it'll ever take a substantial part of our acres, but the question is being asked, especially with all the price it costs putting into cotton. So one of the things I'm going to do today is I'm going to go over a few things that may give you some ideas, at least, of what we're thinking. And I'm not going to lie, it's catered to some degree toward the area that I'm familiar with, and that's the Mid-South region, being Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, and West Tennessee. But first, before I go into that, I want to kind of talk about maybe what's leading up to some of this. We've had a lot more worm escapes in the last few years. As a result of that, we're spraying a lot more Bolgard 2 or any of these dual gene cottons than we have in the past. And when you start making a lot of oversprays to this, that's when these questions come up. Well, if I'm going to have to spray it this much, why don't I just not grow a BT cotton? So that's what's coming up, and I'm going to try to answer some of that for you, at least to some degree. So what's going on? There may be something changing. This is some of David Kern's data, formerly LSU. Now he's Texas A&M, part of our Mid-South Entomology Working Group. We send populations to him every year off a variety of crops, and he tests them. And what you're looking at there is those resistance ratios. That's basically how much more tolerant that population is than a susceptible variety. And this is Cry1AC. It's one of the components in Bolgard 2 cotton. But there was two populations they tested this year that appeared to be very concerning, and you see that those are highlighted there. One was out of Leland, Mississippi. One was out of Louisiana. So when he went further and tested Cry2 gene, that same population in Alexandria showed pretty high levels of resistance, but the one out of Jackson, Tennessee, up at Scott Stewart's area, was really high. So there could be some things changing. Does that mean you're going to have complete failures this year? I don't think that's the case at all. But do realize that there are some populations out there, and you could take damage from time to time. And as a result of that, if we're going to grow these cottons, we need to be scouting them, and we need to be treating them as needed. So I went back, thinking about that, this is actually a picture from one of my trials a few years ago. That's a non-BT cotton. I think, first of all, what we need to understand, it's unsprayed non-BT cotton in the hills of Mississippi, where typically the worm pressure is not as bad. But thinking about that, you need to understand the risk you potentially face going into something like this. Even though that we might have some slight blips with some of these technologies, the likelihood of having a complete failure or a complete catastrophic loss, like you see in something in this picture, is going to still be very low. So I went in, the little table you're looking at there, I went in for about the last 2 years, our Mid-South group, and I pulled all the trials where we do all these sprayed versus unsprayed, and I'll show you a little bit of that, BT and non-BT data. And I looked at the range of yield loss in all these technologies, and this is under different amounts of pressure from light to pretty heavy. So with the dual gene cottons, and this is an average across all of them, the worst yield loss that we had was about 10%. It ranged 0 to 10%. And the non-BTs, we had some areas with no pressure. We didn't have any loss, but we had some as high as 77% yield loss. So you're starting to get a picture of what the risk equation might be there. So looking at the oversprays, we're getting to where we're spraying. It's becoming super common for us on the Bolgard 2s, particularly on wide strike. It's not uncommon at all for us. In fact, it's sort of becoming the norm in some of these high-pressure areas to put diamides over them. But looking at some of these different products that you may decide to overtreat with, both in non-BT, wide strike, and Bolgard 2, Of course, the product in this that performed the best is Prevathon, and you can see that would be the bar on the left. Regardless of what the technology was or whether it had a technology, we did in this case. This is one trial with heavy pressure. It definitely paid to spray, even in the Bolgar 2 variety. Now, this is one date. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the newer stuff coming out. This has wide strike 3 in it and has twin link. But this is one trial under super heavy pressure on one date. Even some of the new technologies will take some damage. And I don't think that's a surprise. None of these things are 100% bulletproof. But what you will see is a little better control with these newer technologies, such as the Twin Link Plus, the Wide Strike 3, and the Bolgar 3, as they come along. And it may actually fill some of the gap that we may be losing with Bolgar 2 now, as you saw in the slides I showed earlier. Now, I'll put this slide up. Jeff Gore did this in his PhD work years ago with Louisiana State. And I use this a lot because it really tells a pretty good story. What he did, timing's critical, and it don't matter whether you're in Bolgar or conventional cotton, or BT cotton or conventional or not. You still got to be very timely, particularly if you're trying to do it with the pyrethroid, which is risky business anyway. But most of the way we're scouting these BT technologies now, at least in our area, we're not spending much time in the terminals. All we're doing is pulling bloom tags. We're looking at bloom tags, trying to catch them before they go in there. What they did is they went out and they put neonate larvae in white flowers, marked where the flowers were, and they infested all these white flowers. They waited 24 hours, sprayed 1 to 60 bathroid. Then they went in 24 hours after treatment. Now, this is plot sprayers, great coverage, everything, probably the best you're going to do. At 24 hours, they had 22% mortality. At 72 hours, 3 days after application, they got less than 50% control. That's what you're up against in the field as well. And a lot of times with airplanes and different things, it can even be magnified a little more depending on the way you get your coverage. So you're already kind of starting out a little bit behind the eight ball. Keep that in mind. I'll come back to it. This is one of Gus Lorenz's plots. Again, it just reiterates some of the damage that you can get in non-BT cotton. That's showing some of the Wide Strike 3. That's your brightest colored plots in that circle. That would be the Wide Strike that's sort of in intermediate there in that circle on the plots on your right in your non-BTs. So the new technologies are definitely going to be bringing something to the table. There's no question. And again, that goes for your Twin Link Plus and your Bolgar 3 as well. But we need to keep that in mind as we start thinking about some of this stuff. These are some graphs Jeff Gore put together based on just the years of data that our group has, and it's more or less looking at how the products perform relative to each other, the first, second generation, and third generation stuff, and it goes from good to best. Notice it's not from poor to best, but it's from good to best. Some of the products, such as Wide Strike with the new gene, they're going to be performing much, much better as we move forward. Here's what you got to remember about. We tend to forget about tobacco budworm. I promise you it's out there. When we start thinking about moving to a conventional variety, don't forget about this. Even though there could be some potential slippage on bollworms with some of these other technologies, they're still 100% effective on tobacco budworm. All right, so let's move into this a little bit. On 9BT cotton, one of the things we're going to have to remember, because we've been scouting, at least in our area, we've been scouting Bolgar cotton, BT cottons for so long. If you're going to make this move, we got to get back into the routine of really, really scouting and scouting really hard. Those days of letting your thumbnails grow out where you can dig through stuff is going to be coming back. We're not going to be just waiting until we get to bloom, pulling bloom tags. As soon as it starts putting on fruit, you're going to be looking for worms. And we're not used to that in some situations. And the other thing is the budworm versus bollworm thing. Again, that's an issue with some products, particularly the pyrethroids. And you cannot be late. Remember that chart that I showed you. You can't be late on anything, but can't be late. You got to be timely. All right, next few slides, I'm going to show you a little bit of economics. Now, we can argue about these programs. I just kind of threw something together to make some examples. But basically what I did is I figured a diamide or a pyrethroid, there's still some pyrethroids, but typically they're mixed with acephate going after bollworms. We don't go after them with pyrethroids alone anymore. And I figured $18, that's 13 plus an application cost for the diamides, and I think I figured $8 on the pyrethroids, but sort of a typical program, at least for our area, a moderate program and what I'd call a cheap program. Did the same thing in a non-BT cotton program at the bottom. Now, in the non-BT cotton program, typical program, when somebody tells me they're going to do it, I tell them right off the bat, budget 3 diamides. Now, I hope you don't need them, but we tell them to budget it because you need to be ready if we have a really bad worm year. Typically, we're getting about 2 weeks in cotton with these products, and you got 6 to 8 weeks of bloom depending on variety. But that's what we tell them to budget. Some get away with 2 shots. All right, now what this is, I went into our OVT trials that Dr. Darren Dodds does, and I took the mean of the 10 locations that he had. So I picked the very best BT, which was the number one variety in the test, and that's the 1611. We got the gross incomes on all these. The gross incomes are based on the loan price, which is based on quality and all that they did. And then this is where I come in. I took the seed cost per acre. This is the full meal package, stack traits and all that, compared to a cheaper conventional variety. Now, most of these conventional varieties don't have the herbicide traits either. Keep that in mind. So when you subtract that out, this is what you got, that minus seed cost. So if you took your best BT and your best non-BT variety, you got about $30 to play with right out of the gate when you're strictly talking worm control. If you just happen to grab any non-BT variety, you're already behind. Variety selection, regardless of what you're doing, is going to still be your most important thing that's going to make you money or not. In this situation, it really could. All right, this is what it looks like. So if you just figure your best, if you happen to choose the best non-BT variety on the market, that's what's in yellow, minus your worm cost on just a moderate worm cross, cost, you're at $740. If you compare that to if you would have chose your best BT with a moderate, you made $10 an acre. If you happen to say I'm going to grow conventional, but you didn't pick a good variety, you can be well over $100 out before you even start, despite that $100 gain, and that's strictly on germplasm alone. So my point of all this is, if you're going to do it, you definitely need to do your homework. You can shoot yourself in the foot by just simply picking a variety just to pick it because you don't want to pay a tech fee. You may start out $100 in the hole before you even get going good and then hoping you manage it well. So having said all that, yeah, you can grow it if you want to. Now, there's no doubt we got people doing it. You better be on top of it. The other thing you need to consider, I was just showing you worm costs. I didn't even show you that some of these don't have herbicide traits. So you can add some more to that if it's going to cost a lot more because you don't have herbicide traits, adding a lot more residuals, particularly in pigweed areas. But I didn't even figure that cost in there. You can improve your net by doing this. You can definitely do it. There's some situations where you can do it, but you have to pick the right varieties to do it. And you have to have a consultant that's on top of it. You're going to have to be, and scouting's going to be intense. You can do it. It can be done. We're doing it every year. But here's the big thing at the bottom, and this is what I'm going to kind of leave you with right here. It's just really what it's going to come down to is how much risk you're willing to take. You saw the pictures I showed you from some of my own plots, some of Gus's plots. If you mess up on this, if you mess up, the results can be catastrophic if you mess up. One of the things the technologies do is they do give you, even despite some of the tolerance we may or may not be seeing, there is somewhat of a peace of mind. But we got growers that are willing to take that risk and accept it and go forward, and that's fine. But I'm just telling you, before you jump off into any of this, do all your homework for sure. You can make it work. You might can save a little bit. If you pick the wrong varieties, you're either already starting off behind or it's going to be a wash. But there are people successful doing this every year. With that, that's all I got.
You actually have time for a question, if anybody has one.
Any questions?
You scared them.
I don't hear real well, but what I think I heard is if you consider the herbicide trait, were there any gain left? Was that the question? For that particular comparison, talked to our weed scientist. He said typically it's going to be $20 to $40 an acre. In that comparison, there would not be. There were some, and I didn't point out every single comparison there, that it would have still been. And again, it just goes back to what level that you're going to be able to manage that. If you have to have, if you have intense pressure and you have to make those multiple diamides, which we ask you to budget for anyway, that's one thing. If you happen to get lucky and you can get away with one, which I wouldn't suggest going into it thinking you might, then despite the herbicide package, you've still made money. So again, it's just how much risk you're willing to take, how much you want to gamble on it, but you can do it. Anything else? Thank you.
Thanks, Angus. Appreciate that.